It's Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Joining me now are resident political junkie Ken Rudin, also known as the political editor here at NPR. We'd like to hear from you. What are you thinking about politics right now as the elections are coming up? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is talk@npr.org. Ken, always good to have you with us.
Well, Lynn, 2 weeks to go.
That's right, 2 weeks to go, and I want to start with the press conference today. The president's press conference today, very much focused on Iraq, on explaining Iraq to the American people, obviously concerned about what the American public is thinking about Iraq. Give us the political analysis of that.
Well, again, with less than 2 weeks to go, you have a president who was from the beginning has tried to make Iraq into a positive for the Republican Party, and that is linking the commitment to Iraq to the war on terror. Most polls show that the voters are not buying that. Most polls show that voters see this as a referendum on Iraq. And again, given the fact that the Republicans' numbers are not looking good, that the House may be lost and the Senate is really teetering on the balance, the president, you know, the optimist in chief, is trying to make the case that it's worth salvaging.
Yeah. Today's press conference came a day after a huge blitz at the White House. The media were invited to the White House. Conservative media was invited to the White House, although NPR was among those who were there.
Well, we're kind of conservative in a way.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, okay.
And what does the press conference plus that media blitz yesterday, what does that say about is it a signal that the GOP is really worried that they're putting this press on right now?
Well, if they're not worried, then that they're not reading the same thing that everybody else seems to be reading. And that is, you know, if race after race, if you look at the races for the House, more and more Republicans are being put on the endangered list, members who should not have any problem and who won re-election 2 years ago by overwhelming margins suddenly find themselves in trouble. So the White House obviously knows that it there's a lot at stake. It's more than just having Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House. It's you know, tax cuts and funding of the war and judges, you know, federal judges and things like that. So the president is not fooling anybody he knows what's at stake. But what's interesting about this offensive coming from the White House, we had Karl Rove was talking to Robert Siegel yesterday in All Things Considered, and Karl Rove was talking about, look, I don't know what numbers you're looking at, but we're going to keep the House, we're going to keep the Senate, and, you know, we have nothing to worry about. And, you know, people want to know either, you know, what polls he's seeing or what he's smoking. But the point is that the Republicans feel better, or at least publicly, they say they feel better about this than I think that they should.
Well, and the president was extremely confident today. You know, he said the Democrats are dancing in the end zone at this point, but he said we're going to maintain control of Congress. I have no question about that.
Is it bravado or what? Well, you know, it's hard to say. I mean, if you look, he's a very convincing guy. I think, look, the president still believes in the war in Iraq. He still believes that it was the right decision. And he still believes, and ultimately, I understand it, he still believes in a positive outcome. Now, most Americans don't believe that, but the president has always never backed down from that. And again, he won in 2002 when he wasn't supposed to, 2004 when he could have lost. And he thinks he'll do it again the third time.
We're going to continue our discussion with our favorite political junkie, Ken Rudin, when we return from a short break. If you'd like to join us, give us a call, 800-989-8255. And, of course, you can send an email to totn@npr.org. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Lynn Neary. We are joined by NPR's resident political junkie, Ken Rudin. He is the political editor here at NPR. And we want to hear from you. Who do you think has the edge in the midterm elections? Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. And our email address is talk@npr.org. Ken, I wanted to ask you about a political advertisement that's created some controversy. Republican Senate candidate Bob Corker asked Tennessee television stations not to run an advertisement that was created by the Republican National Committee. The ad was attacking Corker's opponent, Representative Harold Ford Jr. First of all, can you just describe that ad for us and what this controversy is about?
Well, it's a bunch of people on the screen saying, you know, sarcastic things about Harold Ford, who, of course, is not mentioned in the ad, but Harold Ford is African-American, hoping to be the first black senator elected from the South since Reconstruction. You also have the specter of a enticing white woman saying things like, Harold, I saw you at the Playboy Club. There's some controversy whether Harold Ford attended a Playboy Club where there was a fundraiser and things like that. But you have this white woman very suggestively saying, Harold, I'll see you later, call me later, things like that. And again, Ken Melman has been asked about this over and over and over again. He said, look, it's not racist at all. It's just about Harold Ford. And there are a lot of questions about Harold Ford. But the specter of a white woman talking suggestively about a black man in the South, in Tennessee, where race is always an issue, got a lot of people concerned, not only the NAACP, not only some Republicans, but Bob Corker, the Republican nominee, said, look, this ad should be pulled. Now, apparently, it's our understanding that the Republican National Committee will pull this ad. He said they said that it's part of the recycling, that it goes through these recycles and it's going to go out. But the fact that they defended the ad for days when the whole race, meaning the contest between Ford and Corker, got so overwhelmed by this ad, I'm surprised the Republican Party didn't see the damage it was causing their candidacy.
Yeah. Can I ask you a question in general about political advertising? It seems to me, every election cycle, we talk about how negative political campaigning has become in terms of the advertisements, and yet it continues, presumably because it's successful. But, I was watching them with my 10-year-old daughter one day. I was watching TV with my 10-year-old daughter one night, and a political ad came on, and she looked at me and she said, can they do that? Can they say that? I mean, that was her reaction to an ad being a total political naive.
Well, they do it because it works. And it may not drive up turnout, and it probably does the exact opposite. It suppresses turnout. And sometimes when you beat somebody over the head time and time again, and both parties have done it forever and both parties are very good at it, it suppresses turnout and keeps their voters from coming out.
All right, let's take a call from Constantine in Michigan. Hello, Constantine.
Hey, thank you so much for taking my call. I'm enjoying your show. My question is, well, first I'll make a very brief comment. I think the elections were stolen earlier. I say that as a conservative, not a Rush Limbaugh-type conservative. I'm pretty ashamed of what my Republican Party is doing. And my question is this. Where is Karl Rove getting his numbers? And if he, is this just more preparation to back up, sort of have a background legend for a stolen election? I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much for your call.
Well, I think Constantine is talking about, the controversy of not only the 2000 presidential election where it was decided in Florida and you had a Republican Secretary of State there. You also had some disputed elections, a lot of disputed ballots in Ohio in 2004 with a Republican Secretary of State there as well. So there are many Democrats who feel that both elections were stolen and they think that the Republicans are capable of doing it again. I think that's a stretch. I understand that certainly there's a lot to be concerned about whether the ballots, the machines are fairly and accurately counting the vote, whether somebody will make the trek to get to a polling place and have their vote count. That is a serious concern, and it should be a major concern for both parties. But as far as the Karl Rove numbers, my guess is just that, look, he's a cheerleader. He's the president's political strategist, and obviously they're going to have to keep the morale up, given the fact that there are less than 2 weeks to go, and I think that was part of.
Well, one person who is predicting a Democratic win is Tom Schaller. He is Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Maryland and author of Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South. And he joins us now from his office in Maryland. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Lynn. Thank you. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Tom.
So you're pretty optimistic about the Democrats' chances in the next election?
I wasn't until 2 or 3 weeks ago, to be perfectly honest with you. I think the Democrats will gain seats in the House for sure and gain seats in the Senate for sure. But I wasn't convinced that they would get the 15 in the House that Pelosi needs. And I'm actually still not convinced they'll get the 6 that Harry Reid needs for the Senate. But any more now, it's about 50 seats that the Republicans are defending and maybe 10 for the Democrats at most. If you subtract 10 from both of those totals, that means the Republicans are defending about 40 more seats. A lot of them have incumbents, smart, well-funded incumbents, and so many of them will survive. But even if Nancy Pelosi can only pick up half of those extra 40 that the GOP is defending, that'll give her 20. And so I think she's going to become the next Speaker of the House.
Well, what do the Democrats have to do in the next 2 weeks, or what could they do wrong to blow it?
Well, I mean, they'd really have to try to screw it up at this point. I agree with Ken, though. We have not seen since 2000, after the Republicans realized they had a base and a field operation problem, and since 9/11, we have not seen the Democrats prove that they can base mobilize. This will only be the second midterm election since 9/11, and they didn't win the first one. And so this will be a real test about the Karl Rove strategy of building up the right base after they lost the popular vote in 2000, which I think was the smart thing for them to do, and whether the Democrats have built a similarly competitive base, because in mid-year, off-year elections, only the core supporters really turn out. And the Democrats, for most of the 90s, were building a centrist presidential election year strategy. And unfortunately for that strategy, it only pays off every 4 years if it does.
You've talked about something you've called the 4D rectangle.
Yeah, if you look at where the seats are in play for the Democrats this cycle, they're very clearly in a quadrangle of states in the Northeast and Midwest, bordered by essentially Dover, New Hampshire, Dover, Delaware, Des Moines, Iowa, and Duluth, Minnesota, those four states, essentially using the D's as markers. And it's that Northeast Midwest block of states, which is chock full of old sort of Rockefeller, Ford-style Republicans who survived in the Republican Party, even though the party has been more dominated by the Southern wing, the Gingrich, Army, George W. Bush wing. They still hold seats. And so you have states like Connecticut, a clearly blue state, where three out of the five members of the House of Representatives are Republicans. And so look where the targets are. Three in Connecticut for the Democrats to pick up there. Five Republicans in New York in trouble. Four in Pennsylvania. Four in Ohio. Three in Indiana, of all places. And then there's a few here and there in New Hampshire, Iowa, Illinois, and Wisconsin. So if Nancy Pelosi does become the new speaker on January 3rd, 2007, it won't be because of a conversion of the South. There'll be maybe some pickups out West, but it'll really be the final realignment of the Northeast and Midwest to blue.
So, Ken Rudin, what polls is Karl Rove looking at?
Well, no, but you know what? The point that Tom is making is very interesting. And by the way, his book, it's called Whistling Past Dixie. It's a very, very good book. And it's a very interesting point that he's trying to make, that the future of the Democratic Party is not so much in the South. Because look at Al Gore and look at John Kerry. Both came very, very close to winning the presidency, and neither one carried a single Southern state. And I was just actually, I know we're dying to know what's going to happen in 2006. If I can just creep up to 2008 for one quick second, Tom, in the past couple of weeks, we saw Mark Warner, the Southern hope, one of the Southern hope, the former governor of Virginia, drop out of the race,
right.
And everybody's talking about Barack Obama and perhaps talking about a possible candidacy. Does it make sense then that the strategy really is to look beyond the South, because that's not where the Democrats are going to find their votes?
Yeah, Bill Clinton got 270 non-Southern electoral votes in 92 and 96. In fact, one of the most amazing facts I discovered in this book is that when Jimmy Carter won in 76, he did 9.5 points better over Ford in the South than the other 39 states. But Bill Clinton did 9.5 points better in the non-South 39 states than in the 11 Confederate states. That's a 19-point swing in just 16 years. And not only did Clinton win, he won twice. And in both times, 92 and 96, he got 270 non-Southern electoral votes. So Clinton's already won with a non-Southern strategy twice. And as you pointed out, Gore, but for a few thousand votes in New Hampshire while winning the popular vote, and Kerry, but for 60,000 Ohioans while losing the popular vote, basically did it the last two times. So the last four elections are a very good precedent. The strange thing about the non-Southern strategy, though, Ken, is that it works great with Southerners on the ticket. Clinton Gore ran well because they won in border states like Ohio and Missouri and West Virginia, even if they weren't able to tip those Southern states. And so Mark Warner's dropping from the race, I think, is a serious loss for the Democrats. He's probably going to run for the Senate seat in Virginia, but I'd hope he'd consider, for example, running on the bottom of the ticket as the vice presidential candidate.
Could we just, now that you brought up Barack Obama, could I just ask one question about that, Tom? After he sort of opened the possibility, slightly opened the door for the possibility of a run for the presidency, a lot of people said he's not politically, he's not seasoned enough. How important is that, do you think?
Well, I think he's actually, in terms of his skill set, very seasoned. I mean, I always tell my students, if you want to see real good political communication, watch Barack Obama's speech from Boston in the 2004 convention with the sound off. I mean, the physical charisma of this guy is like nothing we've seen in a long time. Now, is he steeped in policy? I thought he punted on a couple of answers on Meet the Press with Tim Russert on Sunday, especially when he was asked where he would cut the budget after he sort of repeated some conservative mantra about, how the Medicare Medicare and Social Security are too big and they can be streamlined. On the other hand, I'd have to point to Ryan Liz's strong argument that he's made earlier this year in the New Republic. He says, you know, if you're a senator for a long time, you got too many votes to defend, you got too many statements and speeches that they can pull up and parse and compare and contrast like they did to destroy Kerry in 2004. In some senses, it's better to run before you have that voting record. And so maybe Obama's better situated now than waiting 8 years.
All right, that's Tom Schaller. He is associate professor at the University of Maryland. And you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Also with me is Ken Rudin, the political junkie, and he has something to say.
Tom, a quick question also. I was thinking about the controversy over the ad about Harold Ford in Tennessee and whether it's racist or not and whether racism is on the consciousness of the people who put together the ad. But the question I want to ask about that is that does the controversy over this Ford ad, does it have something to do with the Obama candidacy? Could it affect the Obama candidacy in some way?
I mean, I don't know if it affects the Obama candidacy, but I do think there's a racial element to that ad. And the unfortunate truth here, as the University of Michigan has been taking the national election study since 1948, I believe, and political scientists have looked at the results from the 2004 national election study. And one of the things they found, and I thought this was amazing, is that attitudes on national defense do not explain partisan voting of white Southerners in 2004. Attitudes on abortion do not explain the partisan votes of white Southerners in the presidential races, but attitudes on race still do. And so the subtle implication that a white woman is at a Playboy party with Harold Ford clearly, I think, draws race into that discussion. And though Tennessee actually has one of the smaller percentages of African Americans of any of the southern states, it's one of the states that actually has a higher African American population than it did 50 years ago. Almost all the southern states have fewer African Americans than they did a half century ago. And so, I mean, clearly it's trying to be introduced, and the fact that they put it out there for a couple days, and that even if they do pull it, it's sort of like the Rats ad from 2000 by Alex Castellanos. It gets more media attention in the second run than it actually does get direct attention in terms of where it runs in Tennessee. So I think they knew what they were doing, the Republicans, and they're trying to draw race into that contest.
All right, Tom, thanks so much for joining us today.
Hey, my pleasure.
Tom Schaller is associate professor of political science at the University of Maryland, and he is the author of Whistling Past Dixie, How Democrats Can Win Without the South. Let's take a call now. We're going to go to Josh, and he's calling from Raleigh, North Carolina. Hi, Josh.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Just really quickly, I'm a longtime Republican supporter. Obviously been, voting since 18, and now I'm 38. My biggest concern is that, now I really don't even know who to vote for at this point. I've always voted Republican, but I honestly cannot find one reason to vote for a Republican in the state of North Carolina, let alone look to the next election. As a young voter, I don't think Republicans have reached out to young people, and I don't think that they've shown us that they want to do anything for us. And the concern is just the fact that I you don't know who to vote for or why you should vote for a Republican, and that's really what I want them to come out and say. Why should we vote for a Republican as opposed to a Democrat? And I'll take the answer offline.
And just one question. Would you vote for a Democrat instead?
I would vote for a Democrat if it was a good person, but I honestly don't even know if I really like the Democrats. But, I mean, it's frustrating, and it almost ties me inside because I really want to vote for a Republican, but I just cannot see any Republicans in the state of North Carolina that are going to do anything in a positive direction. And looking forward to the possible candidates for presidency, I mean, I was a big supporter of George W. I mean, I really enjoy him as a president. I think he's doing the best job that he can do. And so looking forward to that, I just don't see how I can pull myself to vote for a Democrat, but let alone, again, just that constant conflict of, okay, well, why vote for a Republican, which is constantly what I'm getting questioned by all my friends here in North Carolina. Why would I vote for a Republican
okay.
at this point? And honestly, I don't even have any answer for him.
All right. Thanks so much for calling, Josh.
Thank you.
That's kind of bad news for Republicans, but it's not particularly good news for Democrats. It didn't sound like this disenchanted Republican voter really wants to vote for a Democrat either.
Well, the good news for Republicans in North Carolina, that there is no statewide election. There's no senator or governor's race in North Carolina. So maybe, maybe the vote is not lost here. But a lot of Republicans have made the complaint that the party has lost its way on taxes, on moral values. The Mark Foley scandal, well, I don't think it's going to bring down the Republican control of Congress. It may affect the outcome in several races, but there are a lot of conservatives who said this is not what the party should be standing for. Not that the party stands for Mark Foley, but the fact is that it happened under a Republican speaker, under a Republican watch, and if it happens under Republicans, what's the difference between Republicans and Democrats?
Regarding the Foley scandal, it seems to have faded from the news. We have an email here from a listener asking, how is the Republican replacing Foley doing in that race? Two questions. One is it going to continue to be an issue? Is it going to be an issue in the elections in 2 weeks, that scandal? And two, how is that Republican doing?
Well, it's an issue only in races that affect that Mark Foley affects. In other words, Deborah Price, the fourth-ranking Republican in the House from Columbus, Ohio, once described Foley as one of her best friends in Congress. She said that in a Columbus magazine article. And she also took money from Mark Foley, who raised a lot of money for Republicans. So that hurts her. Tom Reynolds, the chairman of the Republican National Congressional Committee in Buffalo, New York, may have taken some heat because he may have known something about Foley in advance but didn't talk about it. And the Republicans are in trouble in that Florida 16th race, but nationally it's not playing out in other races.
All right. Thanks so much for joining us, Ken.
I love that theme song. Thanks, Lynn.
Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. You can catch his latest Political Junkie column and his podcast, It's All Politics, at our website, npr.org. Neil Conan is back tomorrow. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, and this is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.